elbows dropped by Martellus Bennett. And Anthony Barr smacked Aaron Rodgers, who's down at the 30-yard line. Anthony Barr smacked Aaron Rodgers right as he threw the ball. And Rodgers is writhing in pain on the ground.
That was the turning point in the Vikings' big win yesterday over the Green Bay Packers. Joining us now, always a pleasure, voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. What's up, gentlemen?
How are you today?
Pretty good.
Seems like always an interesting weekend, and yesterday was no different.
Nope. Vikings first place operation into next week's game against Baltimore, and the landscape of the entire National Football League changed yesterday when Aaron Rodgers broke his collarbone and was lost for the season.
Does it take a little, you spend a lot of time with the team, a lot of time with the players, does it diminish the enjoyment of a big rivalry win like that when it comes with that sort of asterisk of, well, Aaron Rodgers went down, and so of course we won the game? Or
well,
is it
for,
just like,
for me,
beat the Packers? So
it initially
awesome.
Does. It initially does, where I'm not really of the braggadocious variety, because I recognize that things happen in the NFL. It's very difficult to win, and it's a very physical game. But when things settle down and you recognize your team is 4-2, you beat a division rival, you're on the grind every single week because of your problems, then you just move on. I mean, the Minnesota Vikings last year had 12 different offensive line combinations, 5 left tackles, have lost Sam Bradford maybe for the season. This year, Dalvin Cook might have been the offensive rookie of the year. He's out, and we didn't have Stephon Diggs yesterday.
And
so
that's what I sort of come back to after the game. It's like, yeah, it sucks that Aaron Rodgers went down. I feel bad for Packers fans.
If it had been a cheap hit, it would have changed the opinion on everything.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if Anthony Barr had cheated and, you know, thrown him down, then landed on him, and there was a 15-yard penalty, and Rodgers broke his collarbone, it would be different, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah, but it's not like the Vikings haven't had their own share of problems and injuries. That's
right.
Why it's like, yeah, it happens. It's football.
Right.
What was your assessment of Case despite Rodgers going out? Did he play a solid game even though the Aaron Rodgers didn't play the whole time?
Yeah, Case is fine. You know, and I think I shared with you guys last week that really in underrated fashion, Case Keenum has been a good quarterback for this team. He, when he made his debut against Pittsburgh, it was a very awkward weekend for him in that he didn't know he was going to start until 3 hours before the game, which just makes it a little more difficult. Then after that, he lights up Tampa. I thought he played better than some people gave him credit for in a loss to the Lions. The reason the Vikings lost to the Lions were due to fumbles, none of them by Keenum, and dropped interceptions. Mm-hmm. And then he had to come in an awkward spot Monday night against the Chicago Bears, and he lit it up. I mean, he went 17 for 21 for 100 and change and a touchdown to Kyle Rudolph. So Case Keenum has been a high-end backup quarterback called into duty, who's not making mistakes. His running is sorely needed with this team because, you know, with Sam Bradford, you get certain things down the field you're not going to get from Keenum, but you're not going to get Sam to run out of trouble when the protection breaks down, and that's what Case is giving you. So he's been a spark.
You seeing more cohesion, I mean, in the game and in practice with Case and the rest of the team?
Well, with Keenum, I mean, the offensive line, now is through 6 games, and it was one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL last year. So you give left tackle Riley Reiff a ton of cash to join your team. You bring in Mike Remmers to play right tackle. They had a replacement at left guard, a rookie at center, and a veteran from Michigan Tech playing right guard. So while that still gels, and quite honestly, it's done just fantastic this year, And now you try to fix the running game without Dalvin Cook and operate without Stephon Diggs. It's an ever-changing situation for the Vikings offense, seemingly on a weekly basis, one that Keenum embraces and seems to make work.
Let's talk a little bit about the upcoming opponent. We've got the Baltimore Ravens coming to town this week. You've got Cleveland in London after that. The Vikings are finding themselves at 4-2 in pretty good shape, looking a good chance to be 6-2 going into the bye.
Yeah, we should be 6-2. They should beat the Ravens. Now, the Ravens lost at home to Chicago yesterday. Baltimore has been topsy-turvy this year. Quarterback Joe Flacco has Super Bowl and postseason equity, so you can't sleep on him. They have a wide receiver named Mike Wallace who used to play here and for your Dolphins. And Mike's going to want to come here and try to get behind the secondary, which I think is going to be difficult. One interesting thing yesterday with Rodgers or with Hundley, their backup quarterback, is the Vikings defense put third-year corner Trey Waynes on Jordy Nelson the entire game. And for those of us, you know, into it in hardcore fashion, wondering what the matchups would be like yesterday, Xavier Rhodes is widely considered one of the best corners in the NFL, and he was on wide receiver Davante Adams all game. So now you get Wallace, who I would expect Waynes to check. Max Williams, a former Golden Gophers tight end, he can be sneaky too. He plays for the Ravens. That team has faced innumerable injuries this year. It looks absolutely like a non-playoff team, and this is a game the Vikings should win.
Does the did the Xavier Adams matchup yesterday surprise you at all, or is that more of a reflection of, you know, Jordy's still talented and Jordy's mm-hmm. still a weapon,
yeah,
but is his value diminished a little bit? Is Adams the bigger threat?
No, not really. I of the two, I would take Nelson 10 out of 10 times. For whatever the reason, I think Trey matches up well with Jordy, and I can't exactly explain why. You know, in some of these games, specifically the one last year at US Bank Stadium, Zimmer has put Waynes on Nelson, and Nelson has not had huge games. Now, Jordy killed this team at Lambeau Field in the penultimate game last season, you know, and that was kind of a hodgepodge of coverage. But with Waynes playing the way he is, a second-year guy, Mackenzie Alexander, is really, really playing well. And you have Xavier Rhodes, the veteran Terrence Newman, Harrison Smith, Harry the Hitman, has three picks. He had a sack and a half yesterday, one of the better games in Harrison's career. The back end of the defense is really, really good.
What talk at all should be around Teddy Bridgewater?
Well, this is a big week because he is eligible to come off the physically unable to perform list. So the question is, what's the next move with Teddy Bridgewater? I would guess he goes to the active roster. There was a tweet yesterday from a National Football League reporting heavy hitter named Jay Glazer that indicated he had steam. Bradford's left knee is in peril. It's in really, really bad shape, and there are chronic situations with it where not only might he not play this year, according to Jay, Sam might be done. Now, I can't confirm that in any way, but the backup quarterback for the Vikings right now is a guy named Kyle Sloter, who was an undrafted player from Northern Colorado, lit it up in the preseason for the Denver Broncos. For whatever the reason, they let him go. For the practice squad, where you get 10 practice squad players, those players make on average $7,500 a week. The Vikings wanted Sloter so badly, they gave him $20,000 a week to outbid three other teams for his services. I've watched Kyle perform in practice a fair amount, and he's very physically gifted. 14 months ago, he was a receiver for Northern Colorado, and he wasn't even their starting quarterback at the beginning of the season. So if you read between the lines moving forward, it seems to make sense. If Bridgewater is ready to go, you make him active, and he becomes your backup quarterback to Case Keenum into the Baltimore game.
Have you seen him at all yet?
Bridgewater?
Yeah.
He looks fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, now he has not taken part in team activities in well over a year. He hasn't taken part in practices or team drills or stuff like that in well over a year. The rehabilitation part of it that I've seen with some stress that they've put on the leg to make sure it holds up, Teddy seems to be responding to everything. And again, this is the week they will make a decision what's next with him.
If you had to lay some money down, would you expect that Case Keenum is our starter for the rest of the season?
It's impossible to go hypothetical like that because you know, I can't sit Case now. I mean, you're winning games with Case Keenum, right. And you know, if you look at the situation here, the general manager Rick Spielman created, it was a very difficult situation August of 2016 when Bridgewater had that knee injury. So he rolled the dice and traded for Sam, and Sam had a good season last year and a good game this year. But in this offseason, while looking for a new backup quarterback, he found Case Keenum. And fifth year from Houston guy is performing well enough to win games. So now you take that to Green Bay, where Green Bay has probably the most important player, maybe this side of Tom Brady, to a team in the National Football League. The backup situation leaves a lot to be desired. Where here, you know, now you're looking at a situation where you go from Sam to Case, you win games with Case, and now the backup may be a quarterback who started in 2015 with whom you won a division.
The Packers are widely considered to sort of be the class of the NFC North. They've had so many good seasons. They've won the championships. They've won the division a number of times. But I think the Vikings organization deserves a little more credit than they get in maintaining some stability through all the injuries that they've had and still being able to go out there and win games. When you look at the Packers team yesterday, when Rodgers went down, you realize that's a one-man team.
Yeah, it's very difficult for me to bang on Green Bay for yesterday. You know, at the end of the game, they were down their left tackle, left guard, right tackle. They came into the game without both their starting cornerbacks playing. Then they lost one during the game. The quarterback of their secondary, Morgan Burnett, was out with a hamstring injury. That gets real deep into injuries when you're missing that many guys.
I didn't mean that as a dig on Green Bay. I mean that more as a credit to the Vikings organization. When you look at the number of injuries that they've had, and they're still being able to go out there and they're competitive. They've been competitive every game except for the Pittsburgh game.
Right. And last year they faced a fair amount of devastation with injury, and they finished 8-8, but they were, outside of a couple of games, extremely competitive during the season. This is a deep, fast, and fun Vikings team, one that I think should be considered the favorites to win the NFC North.
Two-part question on this. One, is the NFL gaining anything from these London games, in your opinion?
Excellent question.
And then the other question I have with that, too, decouple with it, is it added stress, the extra travel on the teams to go and do these games?
Well, we'll find out this year, because in 2013, when we went, we were there a week. We spent a week, basically five and a half, 6 days, most of it in a city called Watford, staying at a wonderful hotel called The Grove, where the team practiced. This year, we will leave a week from Wednesday in the evening. We will arrive in London like 7 or 8 in the morning, London time, Thursday. They will practice that day. Then we will play Sunday, and we will come back Sunday right after the game, returning at about 10:30 or 11 Minnesota time on Sunday night. So it's going to be more of a truncated trip this time. I don't really think it's added stress, because things are so controlled there with where you practice, the amenities, the travel and stuff like that.
Travel.
Overall, I think it's kind of a normal road trip. Secondly, I think the London games are profitable for these teams. You know, the Jacksonville Jaguars have gone 5 consecutive years, and I read a story in Sports Illustrated recently with their owner talking about the profitability and just the exposure and things that are enhanced for an organization when they go to London.
Paul Allen, always a pleasure. Look forward to catching
right
up
on
with you again next week after another Vikings win against the Ravens.
Right on. Bye, Sam.
Use that hashtag, Tim Hortons, TCNT, if you want Tim Hortons delivered to where you work. Tell us where you work and why you want Tim Hortons, Timbits, treats, and coffee. And this Thursday will be the first time we hand-deliver Tim Hortons to your office, just because, you know, we like you.
Yeah.
That's
a nice thing to do.
That's how that works.
Just want to meet you, say hello.
The Rochester Theater is hoping that people do well. Government does nice things for them out of NPR. After a you know what, Drew, this is very passionate for you. I'm gonna go. You know what? Because this was the first thing that kind of came out of your mouth this morning when you got in.
You just crossed this story via Twitter.
A little bit of indication of how much you're kind of fired up about it.
Over the weekend, headline is, citing low ticket sales, Rochester Theater asked the city for an extra $80,000.
Oh!
How's that work?
Can we make requests?
Yeah, right. Is that how city government works now?
Can I have $80,000?
Revenues are coming in a little lower than expected.
Yeah, if you're like it,
just cut us a check.
This past weekend, like, the box office was just for a regular theater was like dismal, right? I mean, it was dismal. Happy Death Day came in number one at like $26 million, and Blade Runner dropped like 50%.
Right.
So, but if you're like AMC, do you just kind of go, hey, you know what, city?
we had a rough weekend.
Could you make up for, you know, the lack of a blockbuster this weekend and maybe throw some cash?
Yeah, we came up about, you know, $10,000 short of,
you know,
expected.
I mean,
so
you know, had the horror Groundhog Day movie did kind of good, but you know, our concession sales were bad. Can you just do that? No, of course not. You can't. They'll go, "Hi, you're funny."
We'll get into the brazen shamelessness that the Rochester Theater is engaging in, and which going to the city with its hand out.
We have actually several stories on the wasted money front. So we've got this Rochester Theater story we'll get to. Out of the Star Tribune, we'll talk about the $90 million spent on mental health for patients who don't need the treatment anymore. And who and where and why did a person steal $1.2 million for fajitas?
That's a lot of fajitas.
I love fajitas too.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Your Monday edition of Justice and Drew continues. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. Would love to hear from you. Of course, you can also use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter.
Citing low ticket sales, Rochester Theater asked City for an extra $80,000.
Yeah, this... right?
That's an addition to the theater's annual appropriation.
I mean, yeah. I don't make a ton of money, so, you know, send me some.
They're already given $200,000 already from the city.
Right?
What?
Right.
For what?
Just for being...
For being cool and kitschy.
After a tumultuous start to the year that included losing its executive director amid allegations of sexual harassment.
Oh.
Firing its popular artistic director, which, according to Bill on Twitter, also led to resignations of a lot of volunteers. The Rochester Civic Theater is asking the city for $80,000 to make ends meet this year.
Boy, this is coming at a really bad time when, you know, they've lost their executive director amid, you know, sexual harassment allegations. That's bad for them. Look, yeah. If you got any value, then the people will go and give money to your theater to keep you open. But if you don't,
sounds sad.
It's
like you put together a schedule that people didn't want to buy tickets for, and that's on you. And that is the $80,000 that they're asking for, as John mentioned, is in addition to the theater's annual appropriation from the city of Rochester, which came in at more than $200,000. For 2017. What do they do with the money from ticket sales? Where does that go?
Theater Board President Kay Hawker said that the Civic is doing the thing with my fingers in the midst of a very trying time. Aww. It's very hard. Citing lower than expected attendance figures over the summer, and she noted that the theater's annual fundraiser has been postponed until spring. Well, you know what? Sorry. Again, no. No. If you are having, they say the theater is pursuing sponsorships, more advertising sales, and salary reductions to help bridge the gap. Well, if you can't bridge the gap that way, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry.
Right.
It's called running a business.
Yeah, that's how the marketplace works. You know, and when our advertising revenues are down, we don't go run into the city of St. Louis Park with our hand out saying, it was the lower than expected advertising sales. You know, so how about you just cut us a check?
I love applying real world scenarios to stories like this. It's always like, yeah, right. You just can't. Like, in no other circumstance, for the most part, apart from like government, can you even get away? I mean, even have the words come out of, you know, your mouth of, hey, is it on my check? You know, can I just get an extra? It's funny. I don't even know what it is you're going to ask for, but I'm already laughing. It's a joke, right? Because that's not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Because you know that's not how life works.
Yeah. At least one city council member said he has grave concerns about the request, in part because it arrived late and without warning.
That's his concern?
Well, I came out of nowhere. Yeah. It's so scary.
If you'd just given us a heads up, I could have been prepared for this.
I could have.
Yeah.
Could have saved.
Earlier this year, an NPR News investigation reported on 7 instances of alleged sexual harassment perpetrated by a former executive director over a 10-year period.
Oh, it's like our own little Harvey Weinscum.
Yeah, exactly. Former board members failed to stop his behavior.
It really is like our own little Harvey Weinscum.
And in June, a current board fired former artistic director Gregory Miller, who was popular among the theater's production volunteers. That firing has contributed to an ongoing dispute between the board and the theater's actors, musicians, and stagehands. You mean the ones that people buy tickets to see? Is anybody buying tickets to see the board?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah, those guys. Yeah.
Now, Miller's seeking $50,000 in damages and a lawsuit alleging he was wrongfully terminated. Boy, it sounds like this thing is just a disaster on all levels.
You know, and look, I get it. I know these
just on all levels.
These civic theaters are important for the community, but if they're not.
But
if they are,
but they're not.
But if they are, the public will step up to support them. Because the problem, what happens with situations like this is you get a handful of people, you know, save our, it's like Back to the Future, you know, save the clock tower. You get a handful of people out there going, oh, save the Civic Center and all that. Well, so did you donate? Well, no. Well, then, you know, too bad.
Arts are important. Theater is important. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think, you know, every city wants to have a vibrant artistic scene, wants to have a vibrant theater scene, and civic theaters can go a long way towards helping that. But civic theaters, they're called civic for a reason.
Right.
You use volunteers. You know, you don't even have $200,000 in appropriate. When government tries to get involved and run these entertainment venues, it's always a disaster. You know, if you actually apply like free market principles and put on shows and products that there's a demand to see, then the theater will be self-sustaining. It sounds like the Rochester Civic Theater has not been doing that.
I didn't see, you know, the Best Buy and Blaine going to the city saying, hey, we really like to stay open. Can you give us some extra cash? You know, please. Yeah, that didn't happen. All right. Speaking of money, and I don't want to say it's being wasted. However, this is another money-related issue. Out of the Star Tribune, lengthy piece came out on Friday. Minnesota spends $90 million on mental health costs for patients who don't need the treatment.
Well, then what are they getting?
Well, free room and board.
$90 million?
Yeah, they're getting free room and board. The rising toll is largely hidden, but stark sign of gaps in the state's mental health safety net. So it goes like this. The Minnesota taxpayers, is you.
Oh, yeah.
Shelled out more than $92 million over the past 6 years to house patients who no longer require mental health treatment at the state hospital but have nowhere else to go. So the cost per patient, according to the Department of Human Services records, now tops $1,300 a day, enough to rent an apartment in Minneapolis for a month.
Yeah, a day. $1,300 a day.
Yeah, so the issue here, and we'll go through some of this.
Buy an apartment.
Well, the problem here is that you get these individuals who come in to seek, and when they get into the question of what constitutes mental health, that's a bit gray. But these individuals come in, they get the help that they need, but there's often no place once the doctors say the treatment's done for them to transition back into society. And usually that requires more treatment or the supervision after intensive inpatient care is finished, but places like adult foster care, residential treatment programs, or group homes are often too full to let them in right away. So you have patients that sit in state hospitals for weeks, months, or even years longer than they're supposed to. One patient in Anoka has been there more than 4 years since getting cleared for their release.
That is stunning to me.
It's tragic on a level. I mean, it's tragic for the loss of taxpayer dollars, and it's tragic for the individual who has no place to go once the treatment's done.
Well, I have so many questions. I mean, what is that individual doing? Is that individual doing anything to get themselves out of there, or are they just waiting for the state to do it for them?
They're waiting for the state to do it for them. A lot of this is stuck behind the policies that the hospitals have and how they go to allow to transfer to another place where they can get treatment.
So the hospital has no ability, and I don't want to say kick them out on the street, but 4 years?
Right.
Being cleared for release? Who's making these decisions and not expediting these people that are cleared for release and trying to find them some place to go? If you're spending $1,300 a day,
right,
there's money there that could be more efficiently spent in helping to get them into some housing.
There's a lot of details to this, but you do wonder, just if you kind of go for sort of the quick fix, which is never going to happen, but just for the sake of argument, that $92 million, if you took that $92 million, divided it among all the individuals who got their treatment, were done with their treatment, but had no place to go, and then said, hey, we'll cut you a check for X amount of money out of that $92 million to help you on your way. You wonder how many of those individuals would go ahead and take it and how much money that would end up saving the taxpayers in the long haul.
Exactly.
Every year, thousands of people with mental illness come to the county jails in Minnesota if they are deemed mentally unfit to face their charges. Now, there's got to be more to this, because the example they give is this. If someone doesn't understand the fundamentals of the court process,
mm-hmm.
So everybody?
Well, I think that's a really simplistic way that the Star Tribune chose to phrase
it. Is that what it is? Because that sounds like, yeah. So, right, they are committed to treatment in a state hospital using the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center.
A better way to phrase that might have been if they are unable to understand the fundamentals of the court process, even after if it's explained to them.
That's better. Because someone just not understanding the fundamentals of the court process, I mean...
That's a wide net.
I'm going into the state hospital for treatment if I end up in the Minnesota County Jail. This is frequently where the bottleneck begins. If beds in Anoka are full, the patients might wait in jails that are not properly equipped to treat mental illness. To speed up the process, back in 2013, the legislature mandated DHS transfer patients out of jails and into treatment within 48 hours of a judge's order.
But what if there aren't enough beds?
Well,
exactly.
Since that law went into effect, the state has consistently failed to meet that deadline.
With no consequences.
100 instances, DHS did not admit the patient within the 48-hour mandate. In many cases, DHS cites law enforcement not transporting the patients on time, but another common reason is that there's simply no room in the hospitals.
Yeah, exactly. Back in June, Anoka was over its bed capacity when a judge ordered three people to Anoka from the Hennepin County Jail. Mental health staff at the hospital said they couldn't take them. Jail deputies ignored the hospital staff, tried to drop them off anyway. What a mess on all levels that
this is. Oh, yeah. It's a disaster.
Yeah.
The DHS commissioner, Emily Piper, testified that the problem wasn't a lack of trying on the state's part. A significant reason for overcrowding was that the county officials were failing to find placement for patients who have been cleared for release. At the time of the hearing, the Anoka facility was dedicating 27 of the 99 beds patients who had already been cleared for release, according to the court data. Mm-hmm. The state hospital in St. Peter, also treating patients who come through the jails, was using 16 out of its 26 beds to house patients who no longer needed to be there. So, it's free room and board for these individuals. They don't... Right. Where are the... families.
And there's so much finger pointing going on here. You've got you got Piper and the staff blaming the counties. You've got the counties saying that they just don't have the resources. You've got the sheriff's department that are transporting these patients saying, look, it's a judge's order. This is what we are ordered to do. You have to take them. I mean, nobody's stepping up and really taking responsibility. And there's not much in this story that indicates that anybody's really interested in finding a solution.
In 2016, in an effort to put pressure on the counties to move patients quicker, DHS started billing the counties for 100% of the services after the patient had been cleared for release. But the delays have not gone away. At $1,375 per day, the costs add up. Over the past 2 years, Minnesota counties have collectively paid more than $37 million on the unnecessary treatment costs. Now, our own Representative Nick Zerwas is quoted in the story towards the end here. The fact that so many in the system are placing the blame on others is indicative of how much work needs to be done. We need to look at everyone involved. Blaming someone else is the problem. It shows a complete and utter dysfunction and that the system really has broken down.
Yeah. Maybe government isn't good at this.
Right?
Right?
Maybe
government isn't good at taking care of people that are just having mental health problems. Maybe we try to figure out a way to limit, the government's involvement in this whatsoever. But that doesn't seem like a solution that anybody's really willing to look at. If government doesn't do it, then in their minds, nobody will. That's not true. That's never been true.
$90 million. I mean, you talk about the healthcare problems that we have, right? And $90 million is now. Look, you say wasted. Let's be honest. These are individuals who don't have a place to go, who obviously are dealing with a very difficult situation. But be that as it may, there has to be a point where that person needs to get back into society and can't just solely live off the. I say that, and then I go, it's the government. They will pay for people to be.
Let's make it a point to revisit this with Nick Zerwas. And on the Friday roundtable this week. I'm curious to hear more from his perspective. He'll have a lot more knowledge about this.
This story falls on the lighter side of things. We'll get to it coming up in a moment. It comes out of Brownsville, Texas, but it's making it's gone viral. County DA's office looks into missing $1.2 million of purchases. The purchases involved... fajitas.
Tasty Mexican
tasty tasty fajitas.
No wonder Chili's stock has been on the rise.
Justice.
I my day.
Me
or in
too.
or in my night.
I like
or
fajitas.
This morning.
I had a fajita for breakfast.
Couple.
All the fajitas.
Breakfast fajitas. Have you not had those?
They're delicious. I don't really like the crossover of fajita and breakfast.
Justice and Drew, Twin Cities News Talk, along with Sam. It's funny because I didn't even realize it, but fajitas actually were fajitas entered into my life over the weekend. Because it's true.
Such an odd way to say that you ate some fajitas.
I know, that's the problem. I didn't.
Fajita entered my life.
So you didn't? Did a fajita just like enter your life, like enter your house?
No, so Saturday, I really wanted a burrito, like in a bad way. Melinda was, we're trying to figure out what we're going to have for dinner. I didn't. I was like, I really wanted just like a bean burrito. And so we decided to go the cheaper route, right? And just go to the store to get the, you know, accoutrement. To make a burrito, and so the
cheaper
prudent
way.
Right. Yeah,
you made a home cooked meal.
Well, we haven't found a good place to get good to get a good burrito. That just you know
Chipotle?
That's not. No, we went there, tried it, and it wasn't good. And at least the one we went to wasn't good. Okay. So the boys aren't really into that. So I was like, well, you know what? I'll get some steak, and I'll because they like steak. And I'll chop it up and I can put it in my burrito. So I told Melinda I'll get like some stew steak. And she goes, oh, no, don't do that. Because that tends to be chewier. Tougher.
Right.
So she goes, go get like fajita meat. And I couldn't find any fajita meat. I don't know if it's
called fajita chicken. Meat.
And then, well, or, no, but I want a steak. Beef. I want a steak.
Yeah.
I want a steak fajita, but okay. I couldn't.
You know, yeah, there's not a special
fajita
kind.
Meat.
Yeah, I know. So that's what I did.
A special kind of fajita meat.
Yeah.
I need something from the fajita bird.
No, so that's what I did. I ended up just buying steak and chopping it up.
That's from Mexican cows.
Maybe that's why Melinda looked at me strange, because I came back home with the steak and I said I couldn't find any fajita steak, so I just got steak. And she just goes, well, yeah. And I went, okay.
That's called fajita meat.
Yeah. I thought,
oh my God.
I was looking for a pre-cut.
You're so lazy.
I was looking for a pre-cut. So, but that's not true because I cut up all that steak myself and still cooked it. I'm going to have some when I get home today. I'm not inviting either of you over.
If you go to a grocery store, you go to the butcher counter, you can ask for, you know, if certain cuts.
That's what I should have done.
Yeah, you could say, hey, I need like a half pound of this type of steak and I'd like it cut into strips. And they'll do it for you.
Requires me to talk to people.
Yeah. John will walk in. Butcher, fetch me my fajita meat.
Can you chop up this meat fajita style? Please. All right. So this comes out of the Brownsville Herald. This is out of Brownsville, Texas. But it was like on multiple sites this morning because the story's kind of funny. The Cameron County District Attorney's Office has beef with one juvenile justice department employee. Okay, this one juvenile justice department employee alleging that he stole $1.2 million worth of fajitas during the past 9 years. 9 years, $1.2 million. The Cameron County Juvenile Justice Department does not serve fajitas. The district attorney, Louis V. Sinez, says, if it wasn't so serious, you'd think this was a Saturday Night Live skit, but this is a real thing. Although, if it was a Saturday Night Live skit, it would get an article in the Star Tribune, I'm sure.
Every Sunday morning.
Yeah, right?
Every Sunday morning, without fail.
Their skits aren't news.
Right.
It's not, but they turn them into news. I don't get that. Anyway.
It's so bizarre.
On August 7th, Gilberto Escarmilla took a day off to go to a medical appointment. A driver from the Labatt Food Service in Harlingen, the Juvenile Justice Department's meat vendor, called the kitchen to inform it of an 800-pound delivery of fajitas.
That's a lot of fajitas.
That's a lot of meat.
That is a lot of fajitas.
That's basically a whole cow.
Yeah, I wonder if they were in sacks.
Sacks of fajitas?
That's not a thing!
The woman...
Woman who answered the phone said the driver must be mistaken. The kitchen did not serve fajitas. That's when the driver told her he had been delivering fajitas to the Juvenile Justice Department for the past 9 years.
What
are you talking about? I've been delivering fajitas here for 9 years.
What?
The receiver of the call rushes off to the supervisor and conveys to her the decision that had been had, and that breaks the case, Sinez says. When Mr. Escamilla reports to work the next day, he is confronted with the discussion, and he admits that he'd been stealing fajitas for 9 years.
For 9 years, he's been having fajitas delivered to this juvenile justice department facility and just taking them home. How bizarre. I'm not even mad. That's amazing.
Now, he was fired on August 8th. He was arrested on August 9th after a DA's office special investigative unit obtained a search warrant. When the officers searched Escamilla's house, they found packets of fajitas in his refrigerator.
Yeah.
At the time, the value of the order had been between $2,500 and $30,000, a state felony. However, after gathering documents from the food service and the county auditor's office, including the invoices, the vouchers, the purchase orders, the investigative units concluded that Escamilla had stolen $1,251,578 worth of fajitas.
$1.2 million worth of fajitas over 9 years.
That's,
this guy eats a lot of fajitas.
Or that's one big party.
He would literally, on the day he ordered them, deliver them to customers he had already lined up. We'd be able to, so he was selling them. He wasn't taking them home and eating them.
Right.
He was playing the middleman.
He had a racket.
He had a racket going. Every time you hear one of these stories, too, it's always some government facility, right? It's always just some, where they don't pay attention. Everything, nothing really gets looked at all that closely. He was able to order upwards of $30,000 worth of fajitas and just steal them. And then go to black market fajitas.
Wow. First degree theft felony. In a statement, the chief juvenile probation officers said that his actions have led to a review of department policy.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
That's unbelievable.
The investigation showed a total failure of the chain of authority, especially since the Juvenile Justice Department had been exceeding its line item budget consistently. They were going over budget already. And totally unaware that this guy had a fajita racket going on under their noses.
I wonder if he had like an argument with his girlfriend, like from Office Space, where he you know makes his. It's just it's a fraction of a penny and rounded over a long enough period of time. So you're taking
fajitas that don't belong
to
you.
Technically, no, they're already over budget. What I'm doing is just a fraction more of the budget that they're already going over, and I'm giving it to people who, you know, want to eat fajitas.
And people give us a hard time for getting upset about taxes.
Right.
You know, it's like there's so much waste. There's so much fraud. There's so much corruption. There's so little oversight. This is probably happening in every state. There's probably some fajita racket going in every single state. How do I get in on that? Feed me a black market fajita.
I just want D. Bryan sell fajitas. I just want a fajita now. Oh, I forgot. I have my meat at home. I made my own fajitas. They were really good, by the way.
Your own fajita meat.
651. That didn't go the way that I planned, by the way. I thought that was 651-989-5855. All right. This comes out of dig.com. And it's something we've talked about this quite a bit on the show. And I've actually taken an effort. We were talking about this last week. I've been making an effort to set my phone and my iPad aside, like give it a break. I'm gonna distance myself from you for a little while. I don't need to know, you know, what's happening at all hours of the day, right? It's a tough thing to do when you're used to, you know, checking your email and wanting to know what's going on. Out of dig.com, this individual banned their phone. I banned my phone from the bedroom for 2 weeks, and here's what happened. Okay. He said, over the summer, it was a final tipping point. I didn't like some of the things that the bedside phone was doing for me. As further motivation, it seemed a growing number of voices I listened to in books, podcasts, Twitters, and the medium were promoting the benefits of the ban. So I took the plunge and I barred my phone from the bedroom for 2 weeks, and I got a lot more of what I actually wanted from my day. So here we go. These are the things that happened. Number one, more face-to-face time with the wife, right? They said that I value my marriage and I want to make sure that we have a strong times of connection every single day. When our faces are buried in our screens, that strong connection isn't happening, right? The compelling nature of the phones and notifications is an obvious game changer in the bedroom environment, okay? This is actually from the bedroom, okay? Mm-hmm. More sleep, right? So they talked about the fact that I was reading the latest articles and wanted to check out highlights of the games. The problem was that these amusements is they're just amusing. They're so amusing. I can burn 15, 20, or 30 minutes of this cycle of fun. I'm typically fighting just to get a solid 7 hours of sleep. So they got more sleep. Makes sense, right?
Makes absolute sense.
Okay.
Less screen time makes for better sleep time. Absolutely.
More reading makes a lot of sense, right? Okay. My phone within reach at bedtime, reading was taking a back seat. And I've had that actually issue too, because I have my phone in my bedroom because I use it as my alarm. And there's a book that I've been trying to work through. It's been taking me forever. So I have to, because I like to be on my iPad, right?
Yep.
Would you do this? Would you ban it?
I'd have a tough time.
The games.
I am not bad about screen time when I'm going to bed. That's not an issue for me. Once I go to bed, the phone goes on the nightstand and it tends to get left there and left alone most nights. So I don't feel any need to. But
okay.
I use it for my alarms in the morning, and I prefer it for my alarms in the morning. So that would be a problem.
All right. So far, the more FaceTime with the wife, the more sleep, and the more reading is not enough to get you to ban your phone from the bedroom yet. No, not yet.
Not yet.
Okay. Well, let's keep moving through the list and see if any of these are. All right. Sam, how about you? Any of these enough to get you through?
Well, I use my phone as my alarm clock, usually, so I wouldn't really... I mean, I'd at least have to bring it in for that, because I don't trust other clocks. But I don't know. I mean, I...
let's explore that for a moment.
You don't trust other clocks?
No.
the relationship
of the alarm nature?
If you want to get into this, we have... If I had an alarm clock that plugs in and my cat somehow always unplugs it,
okay,
so I can't rely on that.
All right.
You have a problem with cats, not alarm clocks.
True. I also have issues with alarm clocks that run on batteries because I forget to change batteries.
Okay,
legitimate fears, okay. And it's easier. Yeah. So anyway, I do think that it is beneficial to put the phone down when you're getting ready for bed. Make that part of your routine.
All right, Drew, what if you could do more journaling, more meditation, and prayer? Because that's what happened to this person.
I don't.
Are you a journaler, Drew?
No.
Do you have a diary?
No.
Before you ask, I don't either.
Not an issue for me.
Not
honestly
anymore,
a little
at least.
Surprised.
Not anymore, at least. So, yeah, more journaling, more meditation, and prayer. Drew?
Yes.
This person ended up having more sex.
Well, there you go. See, now you're getting into an area where I think you can make a pretty compelling and convincing argument.
Well, here's the thing, though, because they put the onus on them. They say, I'm a whole lot more likely to make moves on my wife when I'm not reading an article on the Washington Post or the latest clip on YouTube.
Well, what else does he have to do? I guess.
Yeah. So really, this is just more of an opportunity for rejection than it is an opportunity for...
My phone never rejects. My phone never says no.
Less blue...
Always there for me.
Less blue light, right?
Okay.
My optometrist thinks that they're not getting enough sleep. Are the rays really damaging my eyes? My optometrist seems to think that's the case. That's the reason enough for me to look for ways to cut down on screen time. Cutting out 20 to 30 minutes of my day might not make a huge difference, but it's a progress in the right direction. Yeah, the blue light thing. Has that been confirmed? I mean, I know that the Apple products all have the you can turn the blue light off. Melinda and Logan exclusively... We have the blue light off all the time on the phones and the iPads.
I'm not sure what you mean by blue light. What do you mean by blue light?
Well, if you go to the night shift,
sure.
if you go into your iPhone and you go to where you can do the setting for brightness, it has something called night shift, and it strips the blue light out. And this,
what?
Yeah. So the studies have said that's when you go to bed at night, it's the blue light that is on the screen that is what's affecting you and keeping you up. So when you put the night shift on, it strips out the blue light and gives it more of a sepia tone. You guys didn't know this?
Oh, cool.
No.
Yeah. No, I didn't either. It's right there.
Yeah, and Melinda, Logan, and Kyle, she has them exclusively. I can't stand it. It drives me nuts because I don't like having the color not being correct. So.
No, I actually really like that. And I'm someone who always use my phone on the lowest brightness intensity.
Oh, no. See, they do the same thing. I can't stand it. It's got to be all blue light and fully bright.
Blind me.
Yeah, I can't.
I want my phone to blind me.
Yes, I want full capacity, full strength on that. they said they got a higher quality of sleep, and all of these things would kind of attribute to that. Although I haven't found this to be the case, and that is therefore making it harder for systems to wind down because of the blue light and it having the effect on our brains, I'm going to trust science on this one and say that my body probably falls asleep faster. Usually at night, if I'm on the iPad before I go to bed, didn't have help last night. I turned the night shift on and still couldn't fall asleep. Less radiation, right? The anxious studies of the 90s about cell phones causing brain tumors now appear to be rubbish. Scientists seem to agree that micro levels of radiation emitted by our ever-present digital companions don't take much of a toll on our body. Still, why not give your bodies a bit of a break? Weren't you talking about that last week?
Yeah.
Didn't you talk about how we were all going to turn into mutants because of the radiation from our phones?
No, that's not what I said. My completely baseless theory is that, so you go back a couple of decades, whatever, smoking was very commonplace. A lot of people smoked. A lot of people didn't really know what it was going to do to your body. And now you see a lot of instances of people now that smoked a lot when they were younger having issues with their lungs and health problems and everything. So my baseless theory is that everybody's on their phones all the time. I feel like this is going to be our generation's like smoking. We have so many electronics running all the time, emitting gypsy magic and whatever it is that keeps them running. And I'm convinced that that's going to be like our generation's smoking, where we'll end up with some kind of health problems.
We're just going to end up with amazing superpowers, or at least our offspring will.
No, probably just cancer.
The last one on the list here, which is really dumb. Like, all of these I'm down with, Drew, but the last one, number 9, I'm reminding me on my phone who's in charge.
Oh my gosh. Honestly, I feel like this guy is giving himself way too much credit.
Or
like,
his phone.
And his phone.
He's giving his phone way too much power over him.
Like, okay, he's putting his phone down when he goes into his bedroom. Wow.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
How many hours does that really... Yeah, how many hours is that really? How much does it actually cut down on his time on his phone?
All right, so what you're all really saying is that... Is that
hashtag not impressed iPhone man.
Full brightness. Enjoy your blue light.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Avoid screen time as you're getting close to bed. That's a really simple rule. It's very easy to do. Try to keep screens out of your face as you're going to bed. It will improve your sleep.
Thanks, everybody, for hanging out today. Pete Hegseth on tomorrow's show.
That's right. And other things. Have a great day, everybody.
Bye. Really yelling.
Open up the door. Shut up, will you? Shut up. Myself.
Do you hear me?
No.
I don't want nobody to give me nothing.
I'm Chris Addison. Here's a look.